7BR Part Heard.
Hello and welcome to 7BR's Part Heard, the podcast that traverses the legal landscape, examining issues across multiple practice areas, guided by the diverse expertise of our members. Today I'm joined once again by Mariam Syed to discuss the new mental health sentencing guidelines and the Ministry of Justice's proposals for changes to other aspects of sentencing. Mariam is a highly regarded criminal and family practitioner with particular expertise in complex, serious sexual abuse cases, rape and historic matters often spanning decades, and in complex multi-defendant serious crime and murder. Mariam is a grade 4 prosecutor and on both the rape and serious crime panel lists. She also sits as a judge of the first tier tribunal in the regulatory chamber and as a Crown Court recorder in London and the South East. Mariam, welcome back to the podcast.
Nice to be back, Ellie.
Now, Mariam, the law is incredibly fast moving at the moment, and there have been a number of key developments in sentencing announced recently. The first in respect of mental health, and then secondly, consultation about sentences for assaults on emergency workers. What do we know?
Well, Ellie, yep, that's absolutely right. There has been a new announcement of a guideline specifically for mental health, which is the first time there has been a formal guideline for mental health, and it comes into force very soon on the 1st of October of this year. If I could just explain, all criminal offences have effectively sentences which are marked down by either case law, the previous decided cases indicating what the Court of Appeal thinks the sentence is worth, but now more readily there are specific guidelines which are issued by the Sentencing Guidelines Council, which actually sets out in a table the parameters and spectrum of a particular sentence, generally for particular offences, with a starting point of what something is worth, depending on which bracket you fit in, and the general range. And there can be several levels of a sentence, depending on the aggravating and mitigating factors. So that exists for specific offences. But what they also do for very important areas is they issue effectively guidelines in principle. And so there is one, for example, on the treatment of children and young persons in the Crown Court. And what the mental health guideline does for the first time is that it invites courts to specifically look at and ask what was operating on the mind of a particular offender at the time at which he committed the offences. And it specifically invites sentencing judges to look at mental disorders such as schizophrenia, depression, or PTSD, developmental disorders such as autism or learning disability, and neurological impairments such as acquired brain injury or dementia. And then looking at those, there is to be a determination of the culpability of an offender. So it may not ultimately impact the sentence, but it is to be very carefully analysed. And historically, the courts have always had the power and always do this if there is a mental health issue raised. And psychiatric and psychological reports are routinely ordered in cases. And the courts have long had powers to make hospital orders. But the guidelines are seeking the courts to really formalise the way that they approach this particular area. And how guidelines emerge is that Sentencing Guidelines Council will issue many months before a consultation, which is where people are invited to make representations to them about a proposal for a new sentencing guideline. So to your second point, there has been in the last few months the opening of a consultation on the assault guidelines, which already exist, but the consultation now is looking at all forms of assaults, all offences, all the way up from common assault, which is the lowest form of assault, up to attempted murder. And as you rightly say, one of the key focuses that they've raised is the question of assaults on emergency workers, particularly since the pandemic. And we will all have heard the stories of the rise of assaults on key workers, spitting at key workers, incidents at hospitals, and so forth. And at the moment, that's 12 months. And the intention or the proposal is that it should be doubled. But also, there's a wholesale suggestion of a review of the number of assaults in terms of the sentencing guideline, and whether there is to be a new, what's called culpability factor, which would be the highest for certain offences, intention to cause fear of serious harm. And that specifically is intended for things like spitting or coughing, which could then raise that kind of sentence to a much higher level. So those are the developments in relation to guidelines that are happening at the moment.
We've also seen in recent months a strong public reaction to cases like Harry Dunn and Hashim Abedi, the Manchester bombing. Perhaps you could tell us about some of the sentencing announcements in reaction to these.
Well, that's a good point, Ellie. There has been, as we will all know, a great deal of concern about the Harry Dunn case and the lack of justice for the Dunn family, as it's been perceived, and the inability to prosecute Ansar Coolis. And also, when Hashim Abedi was sentenced, due to his age, he wasn't able to receive a whole life sentence. He was, in fact, jailed for a minimum of 55 years. And so he will be 78 years old when he is eligible for parole. But there was concern that the courts were not empowered to impose a greater sentence. And so looking at those two things separately, in 2019, 174 people were sentenced for causing death by dangerous driving, with a further 19 convicted of causing death by careless driving whilst under the influence of drink or drugs. And the government has therefore been carefully looking at whether the sentences are adequate. And in the last 2 weeks, there has been the announcement of a proposal for a white paper to then become legislation in the next parliament. And in respect of death by dangerous driving, what it is suggesting is that the maximum, which currently stands at 14 years, is not enough, and that it should be increased in certain circumstances, for example, death by speeding or racing or using a mobile phone while you're driving. And that could be increased to almost a murder tariff, so to a life sentence. And that has arisen as a result of concerns expressed by families and campaigners and some judges that the 14 years was not enough. Similarly, the careless driving whilst under the influence of drink or drugs is a sentence which, again, is not regarded by some as long enough. So, again, a life sentence is also being looked in respect of that. In terms of moving on to your next point, the Manchester bombing defendant Hashim Abedi, what the government has announced is the counter-terrorism and sentencing bill, and that specifically cites within it the terror attacks at Fishmongers Hall on the 29th of November of last year and the terror attack at Streatham in February of this year. And in each case, both of those were committed by what was regarded as a known terrorist offender who had been automatically released from custody at the halfway point of their sentence. And so some of the proposals look at the suggestion that what is termed serious and dangerous terrorist offenders will spend longer in custody by introducing a new serious terrorism sentence for the most dangerous, which carries a minimum of 14 years to be spent in custody with an extended license period for up to 25 years. And that would then remove the possibility of early release from custody for those who fell in that range of seriousness, whether they be aged 18 or under. And it also proposes increasing the maximum sentence that a court can impose for three terrorism offences. And a terrorism offence can be a membership of a prescribed organisation or supporting a prescribed organisation or attending what's called a place used for terrorist training, and increasing that from 10 to 14 years to properly reflect the seriousness of that type of offending. So that's the government's response to, in effect, public expressed concern about both the area of death by dangerous driving and the sentences that are imposed in terrorist cases.
And we see these announcements on specific areas of law and specific offences, but what is being discussed about possible ways forward in how the courts look at sentencing more broadly?
Well, Ellie, there is a review underway, I think, in terms of the court's general approach to sentencing and how the courts use the sentencing powers that they already have. So, for example, one area that has been discussed by ministers in the last few weeks is a move by English courts to what is styled New York pilot problem-solving courts. And that's where judges review the progress of offenders and they're sentenced to try and keep them out of jail. And what was announced was that that model was to be trialled at five courts as part of a sentencing review in England and Wales. And the problem-solving courts will effectively often specialise in handling drug or alcohol addiction, domestic abuse and housing cases, where it can involve imposing non-custodial punishments and require repeat attendance before a judge for regular assessments. That does exist already, in that many of you may know about a drug treatment rehabilitation sentence, which is a sentence that's imposed in certain circumstances on an individual who actually qualifies to go into such a treatment program. And that does have monthly reviews where you have to actually attend before the judge, who looks at your review reports to make sure that you are in fact abiding by the conditions of the sentence. And if not, you can be resentenced. But this move is to also widen that to other considerations, not just drugs and alcohol. And another thing that the government has also discussed is the wider use of what's called deferred sentences. So you may know that you can have a sentence imposed, but it can be deferred for up to 6 months on certain conditions, that you have to behave in a certain way or you have to meet certain requirements about, for example, addiction or employment or something like that. And it is therefore part of the government strategy to move that forward in a wider way. I should say that there has been some response to the totality of the measures we've been talking about. And so, for example, the Bar Council and the Howard League for Penal Reform have already voiced their concerns that some of the measures, particularly in relation to terrorism sentencing and the increase in prison terms, are necessary. And the powers are already there for judges to use. And so they have questioned whether some of these measures are truly needed. So, Ellie, I think this will be a space to watch closely over the next few months to see exactly what does in fact emerge.
Definitely, Mariam. Thank you for your time.
Lovely to talk to you again.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of 7BR's Part Heard. For more information and to listen to our previous episodes, please visit our website.